America during the 60s and 70s was still suffering from the unhealthy attitudes of racism. I'm Dr. Fred. You're listening to another episode of Study, Grow, Know.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Well, hi, and thank you so much for joining me again. This is Dr. Fred. We're continuing with our series called Falling Away or Political Correctness, which is mainly what it deals with. And I mentioned at the top of the hour that in the 60s and 70s, America was still suffering, suffocating, in fact, from the unhealthy attitudes of racism. And many believe we still suffer from that today. But right now, we're visiting the past to see where we've come from and what brought us to this point. Now, the general conservatism of the 1950s was being roundly rejected by many youths of the 1960s. It's the cultural revolution or the counterculture movement that took place. These individuals wanted to make a name for themselves by creating their own generation that did not resemble their parents' generation. It was really important for them to move away and define themselves as something completely different than their parents. Now, during the 60s, college campuses became centers of debate and scenes of protest more than ever before. Great numbers of young adults, baby boomers, reaching military draft age, and that's the selective service, and not yet voting age. The minimum voting age did not become 18 until 1971. All of this caused a struggle, which played out on many campuses as the country became more involved in the Vietnam War. The generation gap became a growing phenomenon. And it was this juxtaposition of freedom to move with the inability to rise above racial tensions and war that created situations on many college campuses that brought students in direct conflict with authorities. Students saw the injustices, or what they believed were injustices, and they wanted them corrected, changed. The old guard, the established political pillars of society, didn't want things to be changed, and they stood in the way. This was a recipe for disaster, with these two opposing groups coming at one another headlong. Now, it was also the obvious beginnings of cultural Marxism among the young people. During the 1960s, young Americans on and off campuses challenged conventional lifestyles. They challenged conventional institutions. They challenged traditional values. They protested the materialism, the consumerism, and the mania for success that they believe drove American society. They urged people to explore alternative patterns of work and domesticity. They challenged traditions surrounding sex and marriage, and they argued that all paths, all philosophies lead to deeper fulfillment. Even those involving illicit drugs could be justified. They believed that they were creating a new America. Now, it was also during the 1960s that Vietnam came to the fore, as I mentioned, in America. Even though the Vietnam conflict began years earlier, it really was not until the 1960s, the early 1960s, that American troops on the ground actually entered the conflict. Even larger amounts of combat troops were deployed to Vietnam in 1965. Now, it's necessary for us to remember that World War II ended in the late 1940s, and America was ready for a break from war and fighting. In essence, the World War II was really, with a few years of a break, World War II, in many instances and in many cases, was simply a continuation of World War I. With the escalation of conflict in Vietnam, many young men balked at the idea of heading overseas in yet another foreign altercation that appeared to them to have nothing to do with America. And to make matters worse, when military men from Vietnam returned to America from Vietnam, They were treated with disdain, as if fighting in that conflict had been their idea, as if they had become criminals for doing it. They had been drafted, they did what they believed was the correct thing to do, but the majority of America's young people, or at least a loud vocal minority, didn't see it that way, and they voiced their dissent. So with Americans sick of war, trouble brewed at home, students from campuses like Berkeley, California, began to protest the war. Demonstrations soon caught on across the nation. There are many individuals whose names are well known for their connection to the turmoil of the 1960s. Now, aside from the numerous leaders within the civil rights movement and others who led the anti-Vietnam effort, one well-known individual was a man known as Dr. Spock. That's doctor, not mister. Spock was a pediatrician who attempted to psychoanalyze children to determine how best to meet their needs. He also was a very vocal opponent of the Vietnam War. In the 1950s, the mantra that children should essentially be seen and not heard prevailed. If children got out of line, they should be physically punished via spankings. Spock came along and engendered more of a complementary role with children. And because of this and his political positions, some accused him of pandering to children, which they charged spoiled them. So Spock continued, but so permissive was his ideas that he was blamed for a plethora of things in society. Dr. Spock first came under fire for his political activism. Critics branded him the father of permissiveness and said he was responsible for a Spock-marked generation of hippies. In the 1960s, Vice President Agnew, Chicago Mayor Richard Daley, and New York Methodist Episcopal Minister Norman Vincent Peale publicly attacked Spock, arguing that his methods of bringing up children had caused a breakdown in discipline and a collapse of conventional or traditional morality. Now, from his pulpit, Peale preached, and now Spock is out in the mobs, leading the permissive babies raised on his undisciplined teaching. So we can see that things were not well in the decades of the 60s, with the Vietnam War heating up, with American troops sent to join the fray, the civil rights movement gaining momentum led by the charismatic figure of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and children being catered to by parents who bought and agreed with Dr. Spock's book, to the tune, by the way, of 750,000 copies sold within 6 years of its publication. Society was going through major changes. There was no stopping it at all. Now, if you couple this, all of this, with the fact that during the years of World War II, while men fought in the war overseas, many women took factory jobs and did so for a couple of reasons. I mean, first, they were needed because of the absence of men. Somebody had to fill the roles. Somebody had to step in and create the product. And these products were needed by American military and consumers alike. Second, the women needed to do something to bring in more money to support their families, while the husband, the man of the house, the chief breadwinner, was overseas fighting in the war. That was World War II. But with the end of World War II, many women were forced to give up their jobs so that returning GIs could have jobs. And yet many of these same women had grown used to working outside the home and earning their own money. Going back to the kitchen, quote unquote, was now no longer something that suited them. They liked what they had when they had earned their own paycheck, and many were just simply loath to part with it. And this created another form of tension in which women that had a taste of the benefits of earning a paycheck wanted to continue the practice. So we began to see households that moved away from the Ozzie and Harriet and father knows best families, where the father left for work each day while the mother remained home and took care of the responsibilities of the household. Now, what this also meant was that young people were on their own more often because of the absence of both parents who had jobs in the workforce. This caused a lack of supervision, and it also forced children to learn to take care of themselves. And beyond this, it meant that the lack of supervision created situations in which these young children had more freedom than they were probably prepared to handle. It was this type of freedom that created a generation of children who, as they got older, came to rely on themselves a great deal more to make their own decisions. After all, they'd been doing that for a while. And these decisions often included illicit drug use, sexual experimentation. I mean, consider it. With both parents away from the home after the kids got home from school, they were effectively on their own to do what parents hoped would be responsible decision-making. All too often, though, the decisions were not responsible and were, in fact, detrimental. It's almost as if Satan planned it that way, isn't it? Now, the information about a group known by its various names, the global elite, the Illuminati, the Bilderbergers, etc., all many names of the same group, and everything I've learned about them has taught me that most, possibly all, wars have been created by factions of the global elite. You know, you might ask why the global elite would work to create wars. Well, it's done for a variety of reasons. Of course, the most important reason is twofold. It allows the global elite to gain as much wealth as possible through sales of ammunition and other necessary supplies like oil, gas, fuel, those things, for the war movement through the companies that are already owned by the global elite. And the other part of the equation is that wars keep society on edge, a society that is always concerned about what might happen if a war breaks out, is easier to manipulate because that society is already fearful. A society that is at peace and has no concern about any potential war breaking out can't be manipulated, at least not easily. Peace means enjoying life, raising a family, benefiting from the good things in life that are out there. Peace means growing old gracefully while watching your children grow, marry, and have children of their own. Now, wars and rumors of wars, well, they disrupt that peace. People act differently when they're in the midst of a war or when they think one might occur. You know that. You know, it's my belief that the global elite works diligently, to create this constant flux, this movement in society in a variety of ways. And wars and rumors of wars are one of the best ways to achieve that societal change and breakdown. So in a very real way, Satan has planned things this way, so that wars always appear to be on the horizon. I believe he does this through the global elite, hand-picked people and families that he has specifically raised up, blessed with tremendous wealth, and has placed at the helm of his physical worldly kingdom for now. Together, they work toward the day when they believe they will welcome what they call the Christ. And that Christ is of the new age, who will guide and direct this world toward true global peace. That's their belief. Now, Daniel 9 speaks of wars and desolations unto the end of time, the end of this, the end of human history. That's Daniel 9:27. And Jesus speaks of wars and rumors of wars in his Olivet Discourse of Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. Wars keep people and governments and nations off balance and on guard. Now, in order to help get this world to that point, though, society needs to be in a place where it realizes that someone needs to arrive who will have the superior and supernatural intelligence to create true global peace. And by keeping wars and rumors of wars, along with an increase in violence in society, on the front burner, well, the belief is that more and more people will call for that need for peace. Well, that is our show for today. I thank you so much for joining me. We're going to continue, of course, next time when we get together, and I hope you'll join me then. Until then, I pray that God will open your eyes to show you how blessed you are in Him.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.